The official German news agency tonight issued a long statement about the exchange of views which has been going on between Berlin and London. It says that on Monday, the British government informed Germany that it was ready to offer its good services for direct negotiations between Germany and Poland. On the 29th, the German statement continues, the German government said that it was ready to accept this suggestion. It therefore declared that it was ready to receive a delegate of the Polish government up to Wednesday evening, provided that delegate was given full powers to negotiate and conclude an agreement. Instead of that, according to the German statement, Germany learnt that Poland had mobilized. German official quarters continue to insist that Poland has mobilized, though it is stated in Warsaw that there has been no general mobilization. The German wireless tonight issued a 16-point program, which it described as Germany's reply to the latest British note. At what stage this 16-point plan was advanced is not at present clear, because until a short time ago, it was known that the German government had sent to London no official reply to the note which was received in Berlin last night. Nor had Poland sent any reply to a British note informing her of the previous communication from Herr Hitler. Germany demanded, one, that the free city of Danzig, on account of its purely German character and the unanimous will of its population, should return to the Reich unconditionally and forthwith. Two, that the corridor shall decide itself whether it desires to belong to Germany or Poland, and that for this purpose a plebiscite shall be held. Three, that all Germans and Poles who have been resident in the corridor since the 1st of January 1918 or have been born there shall be entitled to vote in the plebiscite, and that all Germans who have been expelled from the corridor or were forced to leave shall return there in order to cast their votes. Four, that in order to guarantee an entirely objective form of voting, an international commission shall be set up, similar to that which operated during the Saar plebiscite. This commission, Germany suggests, would consist of representatives of Italy, Soviet Russia, France and Great Britain. The commission would exercise sovereign rights in the territory. All Polish police, military and other authorities would have to leave the corridor at the shortest possible notice, except at Gdynia, which would unconditionally remain Polish. The exact frontier between Gdynia and Germany would have to be determined through agreement between Berlin and Warsaw. The German note to Britain, which I am giving point by point, then goes on to demand, five, that the proposed plebiscite should not take place before a lapse of 12 months. Six, that in order to maintain communication between Germany and East Prussia before and during the plebiscite, Germany should be granted a railroad and a motor road through the corridor for her exclusive use. Seven, that the plebiscite should be decided by a simple majority of votes. Eight, that in order to guarantee the safety of traffic between Germany and East Prussia, in case the plebiscite should result in a partition of the corridor, special motor roads and railroads should be granted, which should extend over a strip of territory not wider than 1 kilometer. This strip should be declared an extraterritorial zone. Point nine of the German reply to Britain is that in case the plebiscite decided that the corridor should remain with Poland, Germany would be prepared to carry out an exchange of population. 10. That the special privileges sought by Poland in Danzig should be laid down in a manner analogous to the German privileges in Gdynia. Point 11. That in order to obviate all feeling of insecurity on the part of the population, both Gdynia and Danzig should be declared to be mere centers of trade, which would not be fortified. The peninsula of Hel would, it is suggested, be demilitarized in any case. Point 12 is that for the settlement of possible complaints of the German and Polish minorities, both contracting parties should agree that these complaints should be submitted to an international commission, which would investigate each case on its merits. 13. That Germany and Poland should mutually agree to repair and recompense all economic damages caused by their respective minorities since 1918. 14. That the minorities which would remain in either country after the plebiscite would, by mutual agreement, be exempt from military service and would enjoy full social and cultural freedom. Point 15 says that in case of acceptance of these proposals, Germany and Poland would declare themselves ready to order and carry out immediate demobilization of their respective armies. And finally, point 16 is that all further measures which might become necessary should be laid down through mutual agreement between Germany and Poland. After these points had been read over the German wireless tonight, the following statement was given. The Führer and the German government have waited for 2 days in vain for a reply, and therefore consider their proposals to be in effect rejected. Here in London, the government have decided on further defense measures. These are completion of the mobilization of the Navy, calling up of further army and RAF reserves, the evacuation of London and other congested areas, and the setting in motion of the Air Raid Precaution Service. The following official notice was issued from 10 Downing Street this afternoon. In continuation of measures already adopted, it has been decided to complete naval mobilization and to call up the remainder of the regular army reserve and supplementary reserve. A further number of the Royal Air Force Volunteer Reserve will also be called up. Officers and men should await further instructions, which will be made public immediately by each of the 3 service departments. The Admiralty have told all men in the British Isles belonging to Class B and Class D of the Royal Fleet Reserve to go to their depots at once, without waiting for individual summonses. The evacuation of congested areas is to follow the plan laid down many months ago. The exodus of children from London will take about 4 days, and from other centres, 24 hours. Children start tomorrow. Blind persons, expectant mothers, and mothers with children under 5 will leave on Saturday. A joint message from the Ministry of Health and the Secretary of State for Scotland emphasizes that the evacuation scheme does not mean that war is thought to be inevitable. The total number of people to be evacuated is about 3 million, of which about half are schoolchildren. In Greater London, 650,000 children will have to go, and about the same number from the other priority classes. And they will be sent to various places in Sussex, Kent, Essex, Surrey, and Hertfordshire. The other main centres of evacuation include Liverpool, Manchester, Newcastle, Leeds, Bradford, Edinburgh, and Glasgow. There will be no evacuation from Wales. Here in London, ordinary travel is likely to be restricted tomorrow for most of the day, and the mainline railways have warned intending passengers that services may be curtailed until the evacuation is over. As a further precautionary measure, certain hospitals in London and other towns will carry out pre-arranged plans tomorrow for transferring some of their patients to other hospitals in more distant areas. Local authorities throughout the country have tonight been instructed to set up ARP emergency committees. Local controllers have been ordered to take up duty, and the distribution of civilian respirators is to be completed. The requisitioning of premises and vehicles has been authorized, and at least 20% of ARP personnel are on whole-time duty. 24-hour shifts are now engaged on public shelters, and the covered trenches already completed are being opened up. The erection of household shelters is to be taken in hand. First aid posts are being equipped and prepared, and report and control centers are being manned by skeleton staffs. Auxiliary fire services have also been ordered to be ready. Extensive restriction of civil flying over the United Kingdom is announced tonight. Practically the entire eastern half of England and Scotland is now a prohibited area for flights by civil aircraft. Flights over other specified areas are also forbidden. The points at which aircraft from overseas must enter the country are laid down, and the routes by which they must approach these points are given. They must use the same routes when leaving the United Kingdom. No flying between sunset and sunrise is permitted, and all aircraft must fly within view of the ground, though not at less than 1,000 feet. The carriage of arms, munitions, and photographic apparatus is forbidden, and also photography from the air. Only wireless messages or signals relating to the control of the craft may be given. Documents giving particulars of all on board and particulars of cargo must be carried. Non-compliance with these and other regulations may lead to the aircraft being fired upon. The Food Defense Plans Department issued an order today making it an offense for anyone to buy more than a week's supply of any kind of food or to keep more than a week's supply apart from stores bought previously. It is explained that the order does not imply a shortage of food. Its object is to prevent hoarding and abnormal purchases which might cause a shortage in local shops. The order also applies to tea, coffee, and cocoa. It is announced tonight that all licenses for wireless, sending and receiving stations for experimental purposes have been withdrawn. The order also applies to the use of wireless sending apparatus in conjunction with artificial aerials and to wireless sending and receiving stations for purposes of the Royal Naval Wireless Auxiliary Reserve. The British government have purchased 5 million bushels of wheat from the Canadian Wheat Board. Part of the purchase is new crop wheat. Our government has also asked Denmark to supply as quickly as possible 24,000 hundredweight of bacon, more than the fixed quota. It is expected that it will be dispatched this week. All telephone services between this country and foreign countries and with ships at sea were suspended tonight. Settlement on the London Stock Exchange was suspended today until further notice, and the exchange is to be closed from tomorrow. It had previously been stated that the house would close during the days when the scheduled evacuation of London was being carried out. But it is expected that when evacuation is complete, business will be carried on in the city as usual. If not, the Stock Exchange will operate outside London. The Amalgamated Engineering Union has approved the dilution of labor in the armaments industry. This means that when skilled men are not available, new labor can be introduced from outside sources. Hitherto, the unions have opposed dilution, and their new step is regarded as a patriotic gesture, as it should lead to a great increase in the speed of rearmament. 10,000 apprentices in shipyards and engineering works on the Clyde have announced their willingness to take up any kind of work for civil defense. The apprentices, who are representative of all the trade unions, say that they will work free of charge during the weekends and suggest that they might be employed in filling sandbags. The British ambassador in Berlin today received two calls from the Italian ambassador in Berlin. In Rome, the British and French ambassadors called on Count Ciano. Here in London, This has been another day of great activity in Downing Street and Whitehall. Mr. Chamberlain saw the principal ministers, and he also received Monsieur Corbin, the French ambassador. Lord Halifax, who was at the Foreign Office for most of the day, had an interview with Mr. Chamberlain tonight. When official circles in London learnt of the German broadcast announcement tonight, they declared that comment from London would be most undesirable until Poland, as the government most interested, had had time to consider the German terms. It is felt here that in view of the way these terms have been presented to the world, they may be presumed to be official. The non-aggression pact between the Soviet Union and Germany was ratified unanimously tonight by the Soviet Parliament. Besides binding the two countries not to attack each other, the pact stipulates that in the event of either the Soviet Union or Germany being involved in hostilities with a third power, the other signatory will not support that power in any way. Another clause lays it down that neither the Soviet Union nor Germany will participate in any grouping of powers, either directly or indirectly aimed at the other. The pact was signed in Moscow on Wednesday last week by Monsieur Molitor, the Soviet Premier and Foreign Commissar, and Herr von Ribbentrop, the German Foreign Minister. It entered into force on signature and is to run for 10 years, with the possibility of being extended for a further 5. When the Soviet Parliament met this afternoon, Marshal Voroshilov introduced a new conscription law which raises the term of service in most branches of the forces and lowers the age for conscript recruits. Marshal Voroshilov began by explaining that the new bill was to replace the old law on military service adopted 9 years ago, which was now out of date. Since then, the numerical strength of the Soviet Army and Navy had increased by more than 3.5 times, and it was now, he said, fully in accord with the requirements of the international situation. Last night, Herr Hitler issued a decree setting up a National Defense Council for what is described as the time of the present political tension abroad. Military and political powers are concentrated in the hands of the Council for quick action. They can pass any law without consulting the Reich Cabinet or the Reichstag, and can issue important decrees without delay and without Herr Hitler's signature. The chairman is Field Marshal Goering, and the other members include Herr Hess, Herr Hitler's deputy, Dr. Funk, Minister of Economics and President of the Reich Bank, and General Keitel, Chief of the Armed Forces. It is reported from Poland that the men called up at present are non-commissioned officers and men up to the age of 40 only, though for officers there is no age limit. It is emphasized in Warsaw political circles that the process will be gradual. While many are joining the colors in the next few days, others may remain at home, ready to leave at short notice. In Italy, Signor Mussolini has ordered that from tomorrow, the army on Italian territory be divided into 2 groups, one commanded by the Crown Prince of Italy and the other by Marshal Graziani. It is reported from Rome that train services between Italy, Austria, and Germany have been stopped. Further, all forms of passenger traffic within Italy will be reduced by 50% or more from next Tuesday. A decree imposes penalties of up to 3 years' imprisonment and a fine of £100 for food profiteering and hoarding. All Netherlands train services tomorrow and on Saturday have been cancelled, and the railways are reserved for the use of the army. The Colonial Secretary has received a telegram conveying an assurance of complete support and loyal cooperation on behalf of the rulers of the Malay states and the Chinese and Indian community in Malaya. A telegram has also been received from the governor of Kenya, expressing to the king an assurance of devotion of the communities in Kenya and their loyalty to the empire. The messages have been warmly acknowledged. The semi-official Turkish newspaper, Yunus, sums up Turkey's position in the present crisis by saying that in the event of aggression in Eastern Europe or in the Mediterranean, it would be impossible for Turkey's vital interests to remain untouched. It points out that Turkey has reciprocal engagements with England and France, and also a certain responsibility and duties under the Balkan Pact. The German liner Bremen and the British liner Aquitania have sailed from New York, but the French liner Normandy is remaining indefinitely on renewed orders from Paris not to sail. Italy has given an assurance that she will respect Switzerland's neutrality. In Spain, General Franco has created a supreme general staff under his own supervision, which will coordinate Spain's military and economic forces. The official announcement stresses that the new general staff is meant to be a guarantee of Spain's liberty of action if war breaks out. Japan's new premier, General Abe, told the press today the anti-Comintern pact will possibly become less strong than before, even if it is kept alive. General Abe added that Japan would adopt every method of weakening the Chiang Kai-shek regime. He stressed the need for caution in readjusting Japan's relationship with the Soviet Union. A Japanese Navy spokesman in Tokyo today, referring to reports of protective booms at Hong Kong, said, "Japan does not intend any action whatsoever around Hong Kong waters. Japan's naval policy is unchanged. She will cooperate with friendly nations and avoid antagonizing the powers." The Chinese ambassador in London has protested against the British government's decision to hand over the four Chinese prisoners at Tientsin to the Japanese authorities. These prisoners were to have been handed over today. The ambassador says such a thing would be manifestly unjust and would be a breach of this country's treaty obligations towards China. No news has been received from Tientsin as to whether the men actually have been handed over. The British submarine Thetis is now only a mile and a half from the Anglesey coast, North Wales. It is expected that she will be beached tomorrow or Saturday. And that is the end of the news.
Good evening. Britain is standing by, ready for instant war. The reserves of the Navy, Army, and Air Force have been called up, and tomorrow all forces will be nearly fully mobilized. Evacuation of school children from London and other great cities and danger areas will begin tomorrow morning. Certain classes of hospital patients will also be moved to hospitals in safer areas. The air raid precaution service is being fully mobilized. These announcements came this evening after a day of steadily increasing tension, but it's officially emphasized that these movements are precautionary and do not mean that war is inevitable. At the same time, the frantic efforts for peace are going on with increasing intensity. There is still hope in the official view, and in any case, it's not expected that hostilities will begin until the German ships already at sea are safe in port. That, if the official view is correct, would mean about another week's respite, during which the peace efforts would continue. But the news from Berlin is ominous. As you probably have heard, the German broadcasting stations announced that the German offer to Poland expired yesterday, and that Germany therefore regards herself as released from her obligations, whatever that may mean. The terms offered were the immediate cession of Danzig, and that in a year a plebiscite should be taken in the corridor. During the interval, Polish troops and officials should withdraw, and the corridor should be administered by an international force. Late news says that Poland may yet reply, and that Germany may send yet another note. Already, we in England are in the fog of war. Real news is becoming scarcer and increasingly difficult to interpret. We have not yet been permitted to know anything about the contents or the various communications which have passed between London and Berlin. So far as we know, no answer has been received from Berlin to London's latest communication sent last night. It may come at any moment, or it may come in the shape of a declaration of war and a fleet of bombing planes. That, however, is not expected. This afternoon, all stations of the British Broadcasting Corporation broadcast instructions to the public. They were chiefly concerned with the evacuation of the school children, mothers of small children, expectant mothers, cripples, and invalids. In all, provision is made for the removal to safe areas of 3 million children and 500,000 adults, and the whole move will take 4 or 5 days. About 1,800,000 of the children will be from the London area, and 70,000 adults. The evacuation is not compulsory. Parents who wish to keep their children with them may do so. It is expected that about 500,000 children will be out of London by tomorrow night. But there's no wild rush. Mainline railways, it's announced, will be confined to evacuation traffic between 8 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. After that, traffic's expected to return to normal until the next morning, when evacuation will be resumed. Local and suburban lines, which are not directly affected by the evacuation, will maintain a service as near normal as possible. But the London subway system, as well as the bus and streetcar systems, will be devoted almost entirely to getting the children to the mainline railway stations. In view of this fact, the Stock Exchange has announced that it will close tomorrow, not, it is emphasized, primarily to stop trading, but because brokers and their staffs will be unable to reach their offices in the city. At the same time, several stockbrokers have announced that their offices will be open for inter-office trade. All this sounds, and is, very alarming. But I would emphasize again that it does not mean immediate war. The whole of Europe, and America too, is striving for peace. There's a story, I don't know how authoritative, that President Roosevelt's sending another peace appeal to Hitler. Queen Wilhelmina of Holland and King Leopold of the Belgians are continuing their efforts to be chosen as mediators. Britain, France, and Poland have agreed to their proposal, but Germany, while expressing the utmost sympathy with their efforts, has not accepted it. It's reported that Hitler has expressed his willingness to discuss matters with the Poles in Berlin. But the Poles have definitely refused to go to Berlin. They are willing, it's reported, to meet the Germans in some neutral place. They have too lively a recollection of what happened to Schuschnigg of Austria and Haha of Czechoslovakia when they went to Berlin. Still, the offer to talk at all with the Poles is regarded as a sign of some weakening by the Wilhelmstrasse. A few days ago, Hitler was saying that he would not talk at all until the Poles had conceded all his demands. The news from Warsaw tonight is that the Poles are absolutely determined not to discuss any cession of territory. If they stick to that, it means either a back down by Hitler or war. From Italy comes the news that Mussolini has suggested a settlement of the German-Polish difficulties by an exchange of population on the basis of what is now being carried out in the former Austrian Tyrol, where German peasants are being moved to Germany and their places taken by Italians. The Polish-German exchange will be a much bigger job and more difficult to carry out because of the larger numbers and the difference in the nature of the people to be moved. In the Tyrol, peasants were moved out and peasants took their places. The Poles in Germany are nearly all peasants, while the Germans in Poland are mostly business and professional men. How is a swap of interests and property between two such classes to be arranged? It can be done, no doubt, given goodwill, but it will cost a lot of money, which neither Germany nor Poland is in a position to find. There's a strange item of news from Rome today. It says that Italy has suspended all train services with Germany and former Austria. It's not confirmed, but if it's true, it's hard to read anything into it but a warning from Italy that she will not be involved in war if it does come. It's very reminiscent of 1914, when Italy scrapped her treaty with Germany and eventually fought against her. Today, reservists of the Navy, Army, and Air Force are crowding the trains on their way to report to their stations. Old sweats, which is the British slang for old soldiers, are to be seen everywhere, carrying bags and suitcases and hurrying to their stations. In many cases, they're accompanied to the stations by wives or sweethearts and children to say goodbye. Old sailors are also to be spotted by their Navy duffel bags, which they shoulder through the crowds. It's harder to spot the airmen. They are, as a rule, younger and smarter. But they're there. There's none of the wild enthusiasm which marked the calling up of reservists for the last war. Many of the men remember from personal experience what it was like, and those who didn't actually serve I've heard about it from fathers and elder brothers who did. 20 years, after all, is not so long in the life of a generation. There's a grim and, on the whole, good-humored determination. I'm sure the solemn Germans would think some of the men's remarks frivolous, but the Englishman always tries to joke, even in the most tragic circumstances. Some of the jokes have to do with what they will do with Hitler, and some, of course, are what the newspapers call unprintable, and what I suppose we broadcasters should call unairable. On the surface, it isn't a bit exciting, but under it all, one can feel the extreme tension. There's nothing the Englishman hates more than to be disturbed in his business and in his daily way of life. But the call has come and is being answered cheerfully. In Whitehall and Downing Street, there have been the scenes which have become usual in the last few days. Crowds have been standing around cheering the ministers as they came and went. There's been no cabinet meeting today, but ministers have been calling for consultation with Mr. Chamberlain, and he has made what has become his daily call on the King, who is being kept informed of every move. It's noticeable that Chamberlain, when the crowd sees him, gets the loudest cheers. To avoid these demonstrations, and also to save time, he's been using the garden door of 10 Downing Street, which opens on St. James's Park, and from which he can drive right across the park to Buckingham Palace. So far as I can judge, the decision now rests with Falls. Talking to Warsaw today, I was told that they are determined not to give an inch. Britain and France have pledged their word to fight if the Poles call on them to fight for Polish independence, and have stated that the Poles are to the judges whether their independence is threatened. No pressure is being exerted on them to yield. Here in London, we spent the day listening mostly to theories of what this and that may mean. Today, the favorite topic of the theorizers is the meaning of Hitler's appointment of a Supreme Council of Six. In some quarters, it's regarded, took core, as a final preparation for war. In others, it's taken as a sign of weakness. These theorists base their judgment on the belief that Goering, who heads it, is a moderate, and that General Keitel, chief of the Army High Command, is also said to be opposed to war. Moreover, it's pointed out that von Ribbentrop, the most virulent enemy of Britain in the German government, is not included. There may be something in it, but I don't know, and I just pass on these speculations to you for what they're worth. Paris is reported calm and confident. All her schoolchildren have already been evacuated, and she's in a state of defense. London tonight settling down to grin and bear it in face of the inevitable disturbance which the war preparations will cause. Already thousands of suburbanites are planning a day working in their gardens or on the golf course, for the authorities have appealed to business firms to release as many of their staff as possible in order to relieve the transport congestion. To these people, the crisis is bringing an unexpected holiday. Road transport workers are already assured of a holiday, for during the evacuation hours, the main roads after London will be open only to one-way traffic, and that will be outward. I can assure you, however, that London's calm and confident. A lot of work has been done in the last 10 days or so on the preparation of trenches in the parks and open spaces, and in the building and strengthening of air raid shelters. These preparations are now evident, whereas a month or so ago, there was little to see in the way of preparation.